Hello, and welcome to Global Voices. I'm this week's host, Courtney Cordero. This is our third program made possible through a SUNY Oneonta student research grant, and as always, we would like to hear from you. On today's program, we'll hear from Carol Manzik, Director of International Education at SUNY Oneonta, speaking with Communication Arts Professor Guyanne Tarosian.
Ms. Manzik, we had to arrange for this meeting a long time ago because you were traveling. Tell us, where did you go?
I was recently in Korea and Japan recruiting students, inbound students for our degree programs. I spent 20 days there. And then this past week, I was in Sweden and Finland setting up new exchange programs for our students.
So our students would be able to go to more European countries compared to what they had before?
Yes, absolutely, and Asia as well, too. We now have, whereas we historically here have had three very limited exchange programs, we now have blossomed into seven strong ones, both in Korea and also in Finland and Sweden, expanding our presence in Europe. And I'm now also looking at an exchange program in Germany that would be ideal for our art majors.
Why do you think these programs are important for our students? How does it broaden their horizon?
Great question. I think it broadens their horizons in a number of ways. Beyond the obvious cultural experiences that a student can have in understanding how people tick, how they live, how they adapt and overcome, and also how they see other people really enjoy life or enjoy even, you know, family or get joy out of the most simplest things, there's the educational experience. To go to another university or college abroad, oftentimes the students experience a classroom experience with world-class faculty overseas. They learn by instructional methods that are different than ours. They step up to the plate, if you will, when they go abroad and perhaps get into an environment that is more academically rigorous or more challenging than the one they're experiencing right now. They gain a world of perspectives that they normally would not get, especially in semi-rural areas such as ours, where industry, quite honestly, is not as prolific as it might be in a bigger city from the States to abroad. So the student gains a variety of benefits by going overseas, and there are personal and professional challenges that they can encounter that really help prepare them for the next step after graduation.
And you were in Japan, Korea, before going to Europe. What are your impressions from those countries?
Well, their infrastructure and technology is just so impressive. The rail system alone is reason enough to experience Korea. The transit and rail system alone in Korea and Japan is reason enough to go abroad, in my opinion, to those two countries. To see airline industry and a rail industry and a subway industry, systems that are always on time, always kept up, highly maintained, highly efficient, watching the human resources as well, the work ethic. I mean, I always tell students, observe the work ethic when you go abroad. See the work ethic and see what they're doing right that makes a system what it is in Asia in particular. So that alone impresses me.
So what are we looking at? When and what should we expect as a result of your trips?
Well, we can certainly expect more opportunities to study abroad that are very cost-effective, because cost is a major concern from students right now. Students are having difficulty getting the financial aid that they need to go abroad. For example, the UK and Australia are, you know, on average $8,000 to $15,000 to spend a semester abroad. The Korean sites offer a very valuable experience, both didactically and also culturally, for less than $5,000, U.S. dollars, which is fantastic. Students can also expect some unique program components. For example, at Yonsei University at Wanju, our new partner, English majors or communication majors in particular have the opportunity to teach English to Korean university students at Yonsei University in a beautiful rural section of Korea with access to just, you know, 30 minutes away and you're in downtown metro Wanju. That experience of teaching English to university students, not at a TOEFL institute somewhere out nowhere, is a wonderful experience that will sharpen and polish the resume and build lifelong skills.
And how is politics part of the equation? Say, we raise a generation of students who become culturally aware. Do you think that there are things politically that we need to know about those countries that you just visited or that you have visited before? What are some of the issues that people need to think about?
It's an excellent question. I think a couple. I think number one, students from America should be really in touch with how other countries view Americans right now in the middle of all this mess. With that said, countries are also very still welcoming to Americans. So I think a student should go abroad with open eyes, open heart, open mind, but still be aware of the risks that they take and they naturally assume when they go abroad. Because quite honestly, there are areas in the world, pockets in the world, that do pose more risk than others. So students should be in touch with the issues of the day. A quick example would be of that, if I may, is that when I was in Korea in December of 2008, South Korea had just lifted the importation of American beef ban that had long been standing, which was a highly controversial and heated topic, and likewise caused a major demonstration for 10 days in downtown Seoul in the Gangnam district. And that was an area, quite frankly, that as an American, I wouldn't even think about going to because the tempers were hot, you know, tempers flared. So students should be aware of those political issues that are constantly at work beyond the Iraq, you know, war and the controversy there. There are social and economic and political agendas out there that sometimes conflict. I think, though, also that students, on a positive note, that students should also be in an exploratory mode or mindset to understand how government ticks abroad. And again, just like the work ethic I pointed out earlier, can gain much by reading, digesting, exploring, and seeing what type of politics are working well in their respective governments overseas. And just like us, understand the human factor that goes into politics where things sometimes just, you know, don't work as well as they could be. So again, this could be a very good and golden opportunity for students to go abroad and see the very best of what humanity has to offer, politically, socially, culturally, and also see the challenges that is faced by all concerned parties abroad.
That was SUNY Oneonta International Education Director Carol Manzik speaking with Guyan Tarosian, who teaches mass communication courses here at Oneonta. The SUNY Oneonta Art Gallery was hosting a colorful new exhibit until March 18th. James Walton Fox and Valley Fox were showing some of their recent works in an exhibit called Changeless Nature. Mass Communications major Emily Greenberg spoke with the artist. Valley Fox begins the conversation.
I was born in Plantation, Florida.
I'm from New Jersey, the garbage state.
So what brought you guys to Oneonta?
We have a studio in Trout Creek, which is about a half an hour west of here.
We met at a Buddhist monastery, and we live next to the monastery.
Yeah,
so that's why I came to on a retreat up here, and I met James, who lived next to the monastery. So that's how we're connected.
How long have you guys created art together, or exhibits?
We've been married for 3 years, and this is our first dual exhibit. We've shown individual paintings in group shows twice over the past 3 years, but this is our first dual show.
Yeah, the first two-person show.
So the name of the exhibit is Changeless Nature. What different environments and habitats did you guys visit that inspired this exhibit?
I think the title Changeless Nature is more about something that's permanent, that transcends an environment, and that the paintings are kind of the representations of environments that lead towards an idea of this changeless undercurrent, which is kind of like a mental situation rather than a place.
I was actually confused by the name because, in my opinion, I thought it was maybe contradictory a little bit because nature is always changing. So,
well, that's the interesting thing. How do you know that nature is always changing? Because the changeless nature for us refers to something which is natural but that never changes. It's a kind of a ground of being that's beyond fluctuation.
It has something to do with like the essence, and we were talking about that in our lecture, that we're both painting, in a way, the essence of landscapes. So that's why the title Changeless Nature refers to this essence that's beyond time, beyond movement, beyond space. It's this, but yet inclusive of everything, too.
Cool. So it's permanent.
It's like the essence of nature, whereas the cycle of the seasons could be seen as a kind of a surface phenomena, but the essence is something deeper and changeless.
Right.
Cool. So the Dakini painting, to me, the woman, she seemed to represent like societal ideals in terms of physical beauty. She has like very large breasts and thin waist. What is the message that you were trying to portray with her appearance?
I actually, when I finished her, I thought, oh, the next one I need to paint a really like fat, like a really big one, or I'm going to paint like, I thought, oh, I recently saw this documentary on materialism and women being exploited, and I thought, oh no, she has that body, and I wasn't trying to say that. I thought, oh, what if it appears that way? So I painted her because she's in traditional Tibetan painting, that's how she's represented. So that's why I painted her that way, not to say anything cultural. I was just following the tradition. And then I realized it after I painted it that, but her hips are a little big and she's not like a stick. She's not like a anorexic model, at least, you know. So that's just how she evolved. But the next one, I think, is going to have like a bigger waist and try to not be within those, you know, within the context of the perfect Barbie doll shape or something. Yeah.
Do you feel like your art can often be misinterpreted the way it kind of was?
Generally not. Well, this is the first time I've painted a Dakini or painted this figure, so I haven't had any experience with anyone in misinterpreting anything yet. So not yet.
What exactly is a Dakini? Is it a specific woman or?
She's known as a woman who dances in the sky. So she's sometimes mythical, sometimes human. She's sort of like a dangerous angel.
That's awesome. So what can we expect next from you guys in terms of exhibits and projects?
I think Valley's going to keep going with some more Dakinis in different forms, and maybe, you know, red ones and green ones and things like that.
Right. I want to paint a Dakini of each color so that it's not just a white. I want to paint a black Dakini, a red Dakini, a green Dakini, a yellow Dakini.
And maybe with six arms and
three heads.
Some more tools.
Right. The next Dakini is going to have a bow and arrow. And then the other arms, she has traditionally a whip and a hook.
That sounds pretty crazy. So overall, what messages are you guys trying to give through your art? How do you want people to interpret? What do you want them to gain from your art?
I think I'd like it if people came away from looking at the pictures with a sense that they had wasted their entire life up to that moment, and that after seeing this, they've realized the error of their ways.
Wow. That's, think very highly of yourself.
No, but seriously, I think it's more a question of beauty, you know, of communicating beauty and pleasure and joy. Changeless nature is, for us, I think part of the meaning of changeless nature is that there's this kind of undercurrent of joy that is the base of human experience. So if we can communicate that in the paintings, that basic happiness, and that people can apprehend that, then I think we've done our job.
Yeah, I agree with him exactly.
Do you guys actually collaborate on specific paintings, or did you each do your own and then kind of integrate them in the exhibit?
We each do our own, and then we integrate them.
Yeah, we really didn't know how they were going to look together. You know, we were a little worried. But then in the end, we selected them, and Tim Sheasley, the very generous and knowledgeable gallery director here, came out to the studio and helped us select images that would work together. You know, it's kind of like a family reunion. You don't know how much you resemble your cousin until you're there seeing them and talking to them. It's the same with an exhibit. You put everything together, and you don't really know how it's going to work out until it's there.
Well, it came together seamlessly, and I thank you guys so much for your time.
Thank you very much. That was James Walton Fox and Valley Fox speaking with Emily Greenberg. Next on our program, Communication Arts Professor Guyane Tarosian speaks with area resident Scott Johnson about the new meaning of security and humanity in today's world.
My name is Scott Johnson. By profession, I'm a college textbook buyer, but I'm also a student of human nature and of philosophy. I'd like to think that my life is something of a stand for peace in the world and peace in myself.
Do you think that Americans, and especially New Yorkers, should be thinking about global matters, global conflicts? And if you do think that they should, why?
Absolutely, because in my area I've been noticing signs appearing that say, "May peace prevail on Earth." And some college campuses have erected statements, gardens to the same purpose, actually saying the same things in different languages, "May peace prevail on Earth." And I think that it's almost like an idea whose time very much needs to come, and that the more people who actually embrace the possibility of peace in their own hearts, and then by extension, peace in the world.
Are you concerned about the situation around Gaza between the Israelis and Palestinians? And what do you think about that whole conflict?
Yeah, very much so. Yesterday I had a conversation with a young gentleman named Nir Yehuda, who's an Israeli, also a professor at Cornell University. You know, he was saying, because I was expressing my feelings, that it was a shame, and I wish that the Palestinian-Israeli conflict could be resolved. And he said he wished it could too, but he is now hopeless about it, that it's ever going to be resolved, because there's so much hatred and so much violence has gone on that just fuels more and more future violence. And he really feels that the terrorists, you know, the people who are causing it, you know, he sees it as caused by Palestinian terrorists, that they're not human, that there's no way to reach them, and that they just have to be exterminated. And, you know, and I actually got angry, oddly enough, at him for giving up and being hopeless about the possibility of peace. And then, quite ironically, I begin to sort of punish him by raising the tone of my voice and whatnot for not being for peace. I later saw the inconsistency, and that in a sense, I got violent with him for not wanting to support peace. So that leads me to my main point. I think if there's anything of any insight that I can share is what I learned actually through my study of something that's called nonviolent communication, which is a product of Marshall Rosenberg. It's an actual organization. I can best illustrate what he is about by taking the parable in the Bible of the Garden of Eden, that when Adam and Eve ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, what that moment meant was that when they ate that fruit or ingested that knowledge, that they went from a condition of being at one with all of life and just enjoying this wonderful creation to actually judging it as either good or bad or good or evil. And by extension, from that moment forth, they entered the realm of moral judgment. So that now meant that when somebody did something that was wrong, bad, evil, what quite naturally flows from that is punishment and retribution, which opens then the door to violence and war. Each human being has to go inside to that point in themselves where we have imbibed, ingested that same fruit that Adam and Eve ate, and that we have this now, this inner judge, which lives inside of us. Freud called it the superego. And it judges us, and it judges those around us, and sometimes very harshly.
That was area resident Scott Johnson speaking with communication arts professor Diane Tarosian. You've been listening to Global Voices, and we would like to hear from you. Post your comments on our website at wuow.org. Our program is made possible by a student research grant from the State University of New York College at Oneonta. Until next time, I'm Courtney Cordero sitting in for Ashley Wakeman.